Mode.
Well, hi everybody, and good morning from quite a bit north of the Arctic Circle, where we are broadcasting from our Little Bear Meditation Center. At least that's what we're calling it. It's a beautiful area, and the energy above the Arctic Circle is quite quite special and quite intense. And closer to the head center of the planetary logos. Well, it's a question of where the head center really is found, but certainly the North Pole, we're only, you know, 20 degrees south of the North Pole up here. And of course, Santa Claus is very close. This is where he lives, and all of his reindeer are walking around outside, and you can talk with them if you like. Anyway, I'm glad to see you here. We're working with Group Glamour, but I'm trusting that you will be. Well, we're going to do some work on individual glamour in a group way. And I'm going to try to see when we can begin to do that, as well as to continue with this work on the world glamour. We are living in very divisive times, and so many ideologies are competing with each other. And they are drastically different, and some of them lead forward into the Aquarian Age, and some of them would like to hold on to the lesser values of the Piscean Age, which tend to recrudesce towards the end of the age. And DK tells us that by the end of the 21st century here, the Piscean influence will be pretty well withdrawn. He says really withdrawn, and the sixth ray influence very much weakened, and by the, well, you know, I would say by the great conclave of 21-25, the sixth ray energy will be completely withdrawn, at least in terms of the great preponderance of sixth ray souls that we have in the world today. And they tend to be those who are generating a great deal of glamour. Eventually they will, from their numbers, will be those who attack the very glamour that they have generated, because the thing is that whatever you create, you have to deal with. That's the karmic law. When we were, well, let's just, you know, have a little reaching out towards each other as a group in all the different continents in which we find ourselves. And it is our intention to learn together and to work together. Especially at this point, we're focusing on the glamour of hatred and separatism, and we see plenty of it. And we're working towards a unity in humanity because of soul influence. It's not to be achieved overnight, but through the expression of goodwill, which is love in action, will come closer all the time. And of course, the love doesn't have to be sentimental and foolish and unwise. You know, DK is always saying, well, you have two types on the second ray. The wise ones often need more love, and the loving ones often need more wisdom. So we're looking forward to addressing these problems together with love and wisdom. This, you know, I'm sure there are quite a number of groups in the world doing this. This particular effort, Olivia Hansen, my wife Tuya Robbins, and myself, we got together on this and are presenting it as a method of clarifying human consciousness. But there are a number of groups I know that make their attack on glamour, and they have to be watchful about, you know, these glamours arising within themselves as well. So it requires some vigilant work. Now, when we were last speaking, we did note that that aspirants whose soul and personality race around the sixth ray, or whose astral body is there, are doing this work. And that then, when they grasp what's to be done, they can, quote, fanatically adopt the technique of light, that's the one we're working on, in the service of the race. It's a real technique, it's simple in many ways, and DK is giving it to us for our work. And then the work will be completed by second-ray disciples working from the ashrams of those masters who have taken disciples. So I think he's assuming here that there's a little more progression among the second-ray types, a wider type of understanding, a clearer sense of causality, and that the work initiated, as it so often is by sixth-ray types under Mars, will be completed by those who are working on the second ray, and I think that includes many of us, although I'm sure that those who stick with this kind of work also have a fair amount of the sixth-ray in their system. And then later, he says, at a much later date, we don't know how much later, the fourth-ray will swing into activity, and I suppose there will be a very good connection with the Buddhic plane, because, you know, it is the fourth plane. You've seen that many times, you know, in this particular picture. The Buddhic plane is the fourth, and it has a special connection with the astral plane. And it will be responsible for helping to clarify the astral plane once the mental work, the illuminative work, has done its task. So the fourth ray types, once that ray is really kicking in and once there are real disciples on that ray, there are very few right now, that will carry the glamour work even further. And then a massed attack on glamour in the centuries ahead will be launched. So, and as we said last time, you know, if we're not suited for this work, we don't want to be barking up the wrong tree. So, you know, you will know, and we will know, and all of us will know whether this really resonates with us, this particular type of work. There are those on certain rays that perhaps it is not as resonant with them. Now, our work today is in our 13th, I think this is our 13th meeting, and I'll read a little bit. And we'll think together about what is read, and then we'll have an opportunity to make statements or to ask questions. DK tells us, it's on page 200 of the Glamour Book, that the whole subject is related to consciousness, to the second aspect, and concerns the forms through which mankind becomes progressively aware. Well, these forms are either going to open the door to realization, they are forms often created by ourselves, or they're going to veil that realization, the understanding of the real. And just because we believe something doesn't mean that it's true, and that's we have to become deglamored in that sense and disillusioned in the right way. Glamour is caused by the recognition of that which man has himself created. Well, we have this desire generating faculty, and with the desires, forms of that which would fulfill the desires are generated. And the forms can take a lot of our energy and attention and may not be real at all or even leading in the right direction. So glamour is caused by the recognition, these things come into consciousness as if they were real, of what man has himself created. As has occultly been said, quote, man only becomes aware of reality when he has destroyed that which he has himself created. Now that's quite a sentence, you know, and something that we could really ponder on. Man only becomes aware of reality. Well, reality of a certain kind, you know. What is reality, finally? But at least a less illusory type of reality. Let's call it that. Man only becomes aware of reality when he has destroyed that which he himself has created, because his own creations cannot be possibly as revelatory as the creations of the higher beings and of the planetary logos. And so often what we are creating is a veil upon the perception of that which the higher lives have actually created. I mean, think of the throat center, you know. At first, it's ruled by the earth with a tremendous fecundity of creative power. But what is creative is not necessarily real at all. It's only when Saturn and Uranus begin to control the throat center that we begin to come more in line, and the creations that are made are part of the divine plan, or at least lead to the divine plan, rather than just creating for the sake of creating. Think of the solar plexus center. In most people, it's ruled by Mars. And Mars is the subject of desire, you know, because Mars is that planet which rules desire particularly. And the desires are not illumined in the beginning. So all these desire forms are created on the astral plane, and they create a very thick and bewildering situation. Later, when the higher aspects of Neptune begin to rule the solar plexus, we have the opportunity to link up with the intuition, the buddhi, on the fourth plane. And that intuition is actually ruled by, in part at least, by Neptune. So anyway, we're looking at the kinds of forms that man has himself created over the many, many years, because glamour began to become a problem in the early days of Atlantis due to the ignorance of the human being and also due to the artificial feeding of the desire nature by the lords of the counterforce, the Black Lodge, which sought to stop, to deflect man's movement towards the fulfillment of the divine plan. So there was a definite malicious intervention on the part of these beings, and we have not really recovered from it. So anyway, he's talking here about the kinds of forms which man creates. One, those forms which are of very ancient origin and which are the result of human activity, human thinking, and of human error. Well, you know, we can't expect the early man to be as enlightened as we think we are now. This was, maybe 12 million 11, 10 million years ago in relatively early Atlantean times and later as well, but still in the millions of years ago. So DK has told us, well, you know, great things were done, but those were under the guidance of particular illumined souls who existed at the time. The average human being was not that way at all, but was largely an emotional creation and not very high in consciousness. So these forms, they embrace all the forms which the desire nature of man has created down the ages, and are the nebulous, cloud-like substance of glamour. Not clear-cut forms, really, except in the case maybe of the seventh ray. The nebulous substance of glamour. Nebulous from the physical angle, but dense from the angle of the astral plane. If we could have the correct kind of astral perception, we would realize how inhibitory are these glamorous forms. They are that which provides the incentive, what attracts us, the incentive behind all striving and activity upon the outer plane as man attempts to satisfy desires. So, if these ancient forms, and so many of them are of a relatively low nature, you can see that the activity on the astral plane will not be high, and will not be, on the physical plane will not be high, and will not move towards the fulfillment of the divine plan. From these forms, the individual aspirant has ever to rid himself, emerging after so doing, through the gate, which we call the second initiation into wider consciousness. Now, that's so important. It's not that we necessarily get rid of all glamours at the second initiation, but that particular initiation is ruled mostly, not exclusively, but mostly by the sign Scorpio. And the heads of the Hydra involved there are fear, hatred, and ambition, or the ambitious love of power. And when we go through this Scorpio experience, we do learn how to clear the field of so many of the ancient glamours which have our desire nature in slavery, in thrall. And we really begin to desire higher things, which are far more in keeping with the divine plan. So the second initiation is the great marking point for the defeat of so many of the glamours which attack us. But the second initiation is high, and most of the students of the Tibetan to whom he was writing letters had not yet taken the second initiation, and even so they were sort of a peripheral to his ashram, and sometimes he says they were in his ashram in a certain kind of way, standing on the periphery. So, you know, how many of us know that we actually stand on the periphery of DK's ashram or any other? So let us not assume that the second initiation is, in our case, a fait accompli. It may be, it may not be. But probably most of us are struggling with glamours of certain kinds, and probably it's not so easy to determine what they are, except when they are pointed out either by those close to us, who may or may not be correct, or by a master or high initiate who will be correct. Now, the next thing here is about the forms that we are creating, which are not quite the real, you see. The forms we create may align with the real, but in the beginning days they do not. So, number two here. Those forms which are being constantly created and ceaselessly produced in response to the aspirational, now note that, the aspirational nature of humanity, not just the desire nature, but the aspirational nature, and which provide the enticements, the lures, the attractions, which lead the man along towards high personal achievement in the first instance, and spiritual achievement later. You know, certain forms will give us incentive to go forward, and they may or may not be, you know, real, but they will at least elevate us, especially when aspiration is what motivates us and not just low desire. So this is, you know, in a way the beginning of the Neptunian life and the higher type of Mars, which reaches towards something that will elevate our method of living on the physical plane. So anyway, these other forms, not just those ancient forms which were nurtured by the Black Lodge intending to derail us, and which in our own ignorance we continued to perpetuate. Remember, none of us is free of this. Almost all of us were in Atlantis, and maybe in earlier times as well. So we are the very ones that DK is talking about having created these forms. Maybe there are a few, you know, souls who came in from Vulcan or from Mercury in Aryan times. He seems to suggest that during the fifth root race. But the great majority of us were very alive and well and active in this process a long time ago. Anyway, high personal achievement in the first instance and spiritual achievement later. They have in them the indications of the new and possible. So they're good in some respects. These likewise, but this is the caveat here, these likewise, strange as it may seem, constitute a glamour. You know, they don't lead straight to reality. Anything that veils reality, distorts reality, and towards which we are desirously attracted constitutes a glamour. For they are temporary and illusory. There's a term from the mental plane, although, you know, we can't be too hard and cut and dried about where we apply the term illusion and glamour and all of that. There's a lot of interplay between them. For they are temporary, these forms are temporary and illusory, and must not be permitted to hide the real. Now, the real are the... Whoa, okay. Let's see. I've got a little problem here. Okay, my audio has been restored. I hope that I wasn't just talking into the air here. I don't know how long that happened. But anyway, they must not be permitted to hide the real, even though they do elevate us. That reality will precipitate itself at the right moment once the higher light pours in. This is the light of the higher mental plane and the light of Buddhi, which is infallible, intuitively infallible. So anyway, these other forms, they are higher in their nature, they are indicative of the real and are often mistaken for the real. See, that's the thing. People think they're talking to the masters, whatever, and they're really talking to thought forms, much reduced in quality, thought forms of the masters found on the astral plane, and they're taken in and they're deceived. So these higher forms that we are creating, and all of those forms to which people seem to be relating, are actually produced by the many aspirants and disciples over the ages. They're not the real thing. And as DK said about his own thought form there, they offer good words of mediocre cheer. Well, it's not very real, is it? So they are indicative of the real and are often mistaken for the real. They are in conflict with the old thoughts and desires of the past, and must give, which is good because it's higher than the old thought forms, and must eventually give place to the factual presence of the real. Now, you know, maybe when we have totally Buddhic consciousness and our causal body has been destroyed, and our focus at the fourth initiation is upon the Buddhic plane, we will see the factual presence of the real. Up till now, everything is mediated. So, they provide, these other forms, in times of crisis, the great testing for all aspirants and disciples, evoking the subtlest kind of discrimination. Now, you may have noted that, you know, when you look at this map we so often use, that before we can enter the world of the soul, or the world of the higher mind, the world of the causal body or egoic lotus, we have to pass through the fourth subplane of the mind, which is still in the concrete mind, but on the highest levels of it, and it offers a type of discrimination. That is the quality offered there. Discrimination between that which is of the personality form and that which is of the soul. Now, later comes a still higher discrimination. It continues to ascend when we're talking about the lower 21 subplanes, which are still relatively illusory, and the higher 28 subplanes, which really are principled and belong to the present effort of our planetary logos. So all of us will have to pass through a great and subtle form of discrimination. We're learning how to do that now to a certain extent, but it will always get, you know, more and more subtle and clear. But once the testing, now notice his choice of words, DK is amazing with that, has been triumphantly passed. Well, what's he saying there? In other words, once the second initiation has been triumphantly passed, and there are many, you know, many, many types of triumph along the way. Let's see if I can find this here. Once, warrior am I, and from the battle I emerge triumphant. So the first major triumph is found there, and once they have been triumphantly passed, let's see, have I lost my... blah, blah, blah. I think what I better do is go back because I seem to have lost some words here. Yeah, there it is. Once the testing has been triumphantly passed, then can the task of dissipating both these types of glamour be given to the disciple and the aspirant. The ancient glamours and the more subtle aspirational glamours, which are elevatory but not real. Now, you know, we're being asked to do that. Now, have we really done this in our own lives? That's why we must continue to do this in our own lives and do that personal work on clearing our kama manas so that we can actually be useful in helping to dissipate these types of glamour, with the emphasis upon the immediate need or any particular and current world glamour. And that's what we're doing. We're kind of plunging in here. There's all kinds of conflict with competing idealisms. And some of them are very negative and some quite positive. Many are naive and not realistic and not wise. And into this whole field, we have to apply what we know of occultism and of contact with the soul. Okay, well, maybe that's as far as I'm going to go right now. I'm going to just say that this will be the, we'll talk about, this will be the end of discussion, or at least the end of the reading. Let's say the end of the reading for 2 September. It is already the 2nd of September here. And this is our Dissipation of Glamour Initiative number 13. And then we'll begin next time with number 14. So, now what I'm going to do, because there's some interesting stuff coming. Excuse me. And the stuff that's coming is talking about what characteristics we need in order to do effective work in this Dissipation of Glamour initiative in the group sense, and also I think it can be applied to the individual sense. Remember that when you work at your own glamours and when you begin to dissipate what you notice as your own distortions and misinterpretations and all of that, you actually are contributing to the enhancement of the world situation. So I will open up the floor to any questions here or thoughts. I always like to begin with a little bit of reading, you know, 20 minutes or whatever, and it gets us going, and then we can have our meditation. Any thoughts or questions that you would like to address here? And if you're on staff, of course, you can come in, because I won't be able to see your hand. But I can see the hands of those who are part of the attendees. And you can also write questions, and Brett will make sure that I get those questions. So anything we want to say so far? Yes, Brett.
Celeste says, the Black Lodge is not mentioned here, and I wonder if it is necessary to add that them in here. We seem capable of making all our own mess.
Yeah, if you study this, thanks Celeste, if you study this earlier parts of the book about how the origin of glamour arose, you will see that two things are responsible. One is the ignorance of man in terms of his desire nature, and the other is the deliberate intervention of the forces of obstruction, which sought to raise the intensity of false desire to such a pitch that it misled early man of the period immensely. Now, it's true that right here, we're on page 200 or something, and he's already dealt with the introduction of how that came about. So I just bring that in to remind us of how the whole situation got started. In this particular place, it's not mentioned. And of course, we are capable of making quite a mess of things ourselves, but we've been helped along by the deliberate manipulation of the desire nature of the lords of form, who seek to keep the focus of our desire on the lower 18 subplanes, which are ruled by the moon, and seek to prevent our aspiration and our clarification and our reaching for the higher aspects. So the more complete picture definitely does include the Black Lodge, and to tell you the truth, it's going on now as well. There are many, many people who are focused in their solar plexus, and the overall focus of humanity is the desire nature. Humanity, by and large, has an Atlantean consciousness, if you really look at the numbers. Now, of course, there are many who have risen into the Aryan consciousness and are beginning also, a few, to focus in the type of abstract mind consciousness which will be cultivated in the sixth sub-race of our present fifth root race. But those numbers are not great, and of course we have to increase them. So if you're going to look at the whole deal, we have to realize that we do have those who are working on behalf of the Great White Lodge do have opponents. Now, it may be that the Great White Lodge takes them on in a far more direct manner than we can possibly do, but there are these hidden forces. It doesn't mean you have to look for them behind every tree, but they do exist, and the pressure that they are now exerting upon human consciousness at this dangerous time of transition between the sixth and seventh ray and Pisces and Aquarius, that pressure is significant, so we want to be aware that these things are happening. Okay, Celeste. Anything else, Brett? Here's Walter. He seems to have his hand up, so Walter usually speaks.
Yes.
Walter. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, yes, I was impressed with the statement at the beginning about how destroying that which we have created leads to vision.
Mm.
And that seems to, or becomes aware of reality. And that seems to apply to glamour, but also it seems like on a higher turn of the spiral, it could also refer to the causal body and destroying it at the fourth initiation.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just seems to, that there's like a universal concept there, or and it has the nature of expanding through ring pass knots and the nature of how we continually pass through them.
Right. We never can create anything adequate to the condition of the next revelation. It's always an approximation. And as the light from the next revelation streams in, it reveals the inadequacy of that which we have created, which we will either destroy, or let's say a first step might be to modify it more and more in line with the coming revelation. So it is truly representative in some respect of that which we are beginning to see. I mean, you know, think about, you're a teacher at an early age, maybe you're teaching, you know, some lifetimes ago. That which one was teaching then is not as precise or revelatory of truth as what one is teaching now. So always modifications have to occur as the alignment increases, and then finally, as you seem to suggest, there are certain points at which temples or vehicles, as wonderful as they have been and as full of light as they have been, have also to be destroyed so a flood of new energy can come in. This is not only the causal body, but there is a hint that on the third subplane of the atmic plane, there is such a vehicle which has to be destroyed prior to monadic revelation. And then we get that amazing thought that the temple of Ezekiel, which is the monadic vehicle on the monadic plane, has also to be destroyed for revelation of a more intense kind from the sea of fire. So it just seems to be a principle. And if you carry it far enough, Walter, the whole universal egg is periodically destroyed at the great Mahapralaya so that the finite can again become the infinite. So I think it's a principle, and I think we have to be aware of it. And one of our tests is hanging on to what has served us very well at a certain level of consciousness and not wanting to relinquish it. And, you know, we have the famous test in the Bible about the rich young man who was a third degree initiate, and Christ was asking him to become a fourth degree initiate, or at least go in that direction, and he just wouldn't do it. See, he wouldn't do it. Later he did, of course, but at the time he wanted to hang on to his present level of revelation. It was good, but it really didn't allow the inflow of the next revelation. So two methods, one modification, the second is destruction. Thanks, Walter. And let's see here. Okay, Nicholas. Okay, Nick, go ahead.
I would like to contribute some group experience of our own in our technique, group technique, using during the projection of light towards the glamour and the specific glamour we're working on. So, at some point, some time ago, we found that it would be proper to add to our visualization the picture of the rider with the spear of light hitting the beast or the dragon, or like Bellerophontes in the Greek tradition against Himera, or St. George killing the beast. Anyway, this is a pictorial stuff. Giving a good sense of the stage of projection, and we noticed then that somehow, as a group, we slightly I have not discussed this with group in so far, but we are intending to. We were slightly involved in the whole process. We were losing our balance and our detachment from the whole procedure. Somehow there was an element of hate against, not exactly hate, but some let's say unbalanced intense force against, I don't know how to describe it exactly, but some kind of imbalance of emotion against, or the creation of some emotion against the glamour at that point. Hey. And there popped up the fourth ray would, in this occasion, would act as a balance, would act as a force of restoration of what we might may say detachment.
Well, okay, you know, I think that the imagery generated by any particular participant, even in a group process, is a very delicate matter, and people react differently to different types of imagery. I think that the best possibility here is to leave those participants free to generate the imagery which seems most effective and natural to them. DK gives us one image. It's a very simple image. It's a beam of light, which is reinforced by the will. And that much we can use. But when it comes to secondary and additional imagery, some of us may use it. Now, I personally also use some secondary imagery, which helps for me, I believe, as an individual, to see the kind of dissipation and clearing which must occur. But I would never want to suggest that others have to use that type of imagery. So, you know, otherwise we get into the peculiar situation where we begin to hate the glamour of hatred, and we begin to feel separate from the glamour of separation. You know, in other words, the very thing that we're trying to dissipate can take us over. So I think it's an experiment, and your group has been experimenting with this, and, you know, you're coming to your own conclusions. But my suggestion here is that if people want to use secondary or additional imagery which reinforces the process for them, that they be left on their own to do that. And then maybe later, after some time, it can be discussed. So, you know, it's interesting, and thanks for sharing what the result was. When I see St. George and the Dragon, I'm always, a little bit inspired by that, you know? On the other hand, there is this whole question about the unicorn's horn of light, and I think that's a next step in the advancing of that imagery of destruction. You know, the unicorn's horn, the initiate has the power to destroy through light, and eventually we will all be that. Okay, well, thanks, Nick, for offering that to you. You have a thought. Go ahead. I'm going to put myself on mute so you can speak without echo. Go ahead.
Yes, this is very interesting discussion about the vision and image. I tried to say this concept when, which is a very difficult, without a lot of pondering, when we think about the eye, also the concrete eye, how the concrete eye is formed, and then we can think about all the other stages of eye. And this clamor in relationship or vision. All of our lower being is based upon all the, we can say, all the Maya and all the clamors and illusions of the self-image. It must be because that substance is used, which is coming from earlier system, which is full of that kind of clamors and Maya and illusion. So we cannot do anything about that. It is just how it is on these lower planes. When we think about the real vision, which is based upon reality for us, we can maybe saying that the first stage is somewhere on the highest planes or mental plane, and then we think about really on the buddhic plane. And that, if we could call that like antakarana of I, which is related to this antakarana building, in my opinion, when the soul is sending the notes, the sound, and the reflection starts to happen on these lowest planes, and the personality is going to be built. I think it is in relationship to I that the first parts of that antakarana, which is related to I, must be and cannot be anything else than about clamors. When we think about that, Agni Suryans are those groups of devas which are actually building the eye. So that's why before this cannot can be destroyed means that there has to be also another substance which is going to be built and put instead of that lower substance. And that's why these millions of years of constant slow building by solar angels that we can put into our cup, if we use that symbolism, we are filled with all of these clamors and we purify, and then it starts to be a little bit emptier, and in that process the higher substance can be built, and then when that is happening, then we can gain the higher vision, then we can have those insights which are based upon reality, but not before this substance, this concrete substance, has been transformed, because we are that first, or the lower personality is that first.
Thank you, Tuya. You know, we're all part of the problem until we really can stand back, pratyahara, abstraction, and begin to see what it is we have been unconsciously doing all these many, many years. So hopefully now we begin to reach that point where we have a certain objectivity about the personality, because our point of tension, our point of observation, is higher than it has been. And then we can scientifically begin to work with the tendencies which we have been unconsciously following for millions of years. So it's a very, very big job. This is not something that we can simply begin to do and see immediate success. It will outlast the lifetime, present incarnation of any of us, and the real attack on glamour, as far as I'm concerned, lies some hundreds of years ahead, when there's been a general clarification and the Christ energy is very available. Okay, are there any other questions or comments before we go into our meditation? Brett, anybody there? Okay.
Nothing more.
Okay, nothing more. Okay. Well, anyway, we get the idea, friends, that we've been creating all this time. But, excuse me, but if we create in ignorance, and if other forces are artificially heating the creative generative factor in wrong directions, then we have created a great veil ourselves against the appreciation of reality, which is what is generated by the higher creators. We have to see without getting in our own way what the higher creators have created, and this we call reality, you know, at least it's one stage of reality. So now, so many of us are taking the task in hand of undoing what we have done before. And it's a karmic task, and many of those with a strong sixth ray will undertake this task in order to clarify the desire and aspirational nature found upon the astral plane and guide human beings more correctly towards the intended destination, the destination intended by hierarchy. So this is very serious work, and it has to be undertaken respectfully and with due attention to the dangers involved, because, you know, we may think that we are attacking glamour only to discover that glamour has attacked us, as happened in one of the groups, or one of the groups to which DK had given birth. Some people really fell victim, and they their aura was severely compromised, and he had to help them do a lot of repair work and all of that. So we approach respectfully, cautiously, and with humility, okay? And we continue to do our work on the particular distortions which we have discovered may be affecting us in an individual manner. Okay, friends, so here we'll go ahead and we'll work as we have worked. Let me get this straightened out a little bit. And, that'll do it. And we'll work particularly on these glamours, which are really separating the different groups within humanity almost to the point of a internal psychological warfare. In fact, I believe that is a fact, but it's not supposed to precipitate onto the outer plane. So this is continuing work with the dissipation of group and world glamour, and we will pause together in the state of soul as much as we can do so, thinking of our unity together as workers, and thinking of the soul contact and the contact with the group soul and our alignment with the spiritual hierarchy of the planet. So we will have not 10 minutes, but we will have a few minutes. And we get the sense that we are a unifying group working together on behalf of humanity and under the guidance of hierarchical formulas. So we sound the protective Work is very important. Now, maybe if we were a high initiate or a master, we wouldn't need that, but we do, when we do this work, we have to sound the protective formula, and we make the sign of the cross from the forehead to the middle of the chest, and then the left eye and the right eye. So we pronounce together, making the sign of the cross. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. This has to be a reality to us. Now we focus. We know there are three lights we're dealing with. We imagine the light of matter, the dark light, as it's called, drawn up onto the mental plane where it meets the light of the mind. And from that mental plane, we think about soul light, trying to contact it, trying to recognize it. That light of the soul really is blazing forth from the jewel in the lotus, which comes from the monad and from the lighted presence of the solar angel within our egoic lotus. And so now we fuse in our imagination these three lights. That's going to create the searchlight that we're going to use. We visualize the fusion of the two lesser lights with the light of the soul, and we visualize this taking place on the mental plane. And then we're going to say the mantram together, followed by the sacred word, acknowledging that the three lights are one light. The light is one, and in that light we shall see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Then the group says together the following: Radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. Visualize the great searchlight that the three united forms of light have created, and that light as a group, blending our individual searchlights with all those of the group members, one great searchlight sent out upon what we imagine to be the astral plane, which DK rather sees as a seething gray mass of impermanent and delusive forms. Our light together is strong, especially now as we invoke the spiritual will coming ultimately from the monad and the atmic plane through the jewel and the lotus and the sacrifice petals and into the head centers on the astral and mental planes, astral and etheric planes. The spiritual will we invoke together. May the will of the ashram and of the greater ashram and finally of the great center of will, may some aspect of that will stand behind our efforts together. And with the visualization of this will invoked and strengthening our group beam of light, we say together, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. And this is the empowering of the beam with the will of the higher agencies who seek to see these glamours and distortions dissipated. We draw upon that higher will. And now we're going to name the glamour to be dissipated as the words of power are uttered, and we'll use our imagination all during this, seeing that take place which we are uttering as a word of power. The light is intensified, it is willfully powerful, it is shared, it is focused on the astral plane, and our targets are known. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of hatred and separativeness. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life, the vitality behind the glamour. With these three words of power in mind, we will work in silence for 5 minutes and with intensity of purpose, whilst the work which we have enunciated is seen proceeding. having worked together on the Empowered Beam, group beam, at this dissipation, this weakening of those forces, we together retract our beam onto the mental plane, we turn our attention away from the astral plane, and we imaginatively, as the Tibetan says, the searchlight of the soul is shut off, and notice he calls it of the soul, even though it has the mental and the material lights connected. Now, together, we will sound the Om three times, knowing, realizing that some good work has been done, and that incrementally we can continue to advance towards the weakening and the dissipation of this very potent glamour, hatred, and its root separativeness. So here, friends, we are as a little unit, keeping, when it is possible, our rhythmic application of the triple light into the area of bewilderment. The area of delusion. So we will continue to do that. We'll meet again on the 9th of September. It'll be the 9th for us at least, and I know some of you start one day earlier. That's going to be, that 9th is always important to us because it is the anniversary of the founding of the Seven Ray Institute in Virgo, and so it will be 31 years actually. So I look forward to seeing you there, working with you. Thank you for attending. And, you know, as we did, a question was brought up during the question period that had been on the minds of the questioner, and it wasn't necessarily directly related to the text. And please do that. So if you have a question or a thought about our general process, the time after the reading is the good time to bring that up. That'll be our discussion period. And, you know, following the meditation will pretty well hold the effects of that. So, thank you for your presence. And we'll be working with you tomorrow. We'll continue our broadcasting series in the Ask work. And I believe we talked about the soul qualities of your particular nation. Now, tomorrow, we'll talk about the personality qualities of your particular nation as you perceive those qualities. And we'll continue with that until we again begin the series of working with particular countries. Thank you for your presence, and have a good day, evening, afternoon, whatever it is for you. And bye for now.